You're listening to Don't IEP Alone with Special Education Advocate Lisa Leitner. For more information about Lisa, the IEP Toolkit, and more ways we can help you in your process, go to adayinourshoes.com. Now back to the show with your host, Lisa.
Hello and good morning. Lisa Leitner here with A Day in Our Shoes and Don't IEP Alone. Thank you for tuning in. Today is going to be a bit of a repeat because I am getting a lot of the same questions about kids, and I'm looking at my calendar. It's April, so yes, it is common for this to keep coming up during this time of year. What am I talking about? Behavior. Behavior and FBAs and BIPs, which is Behavior Improvement Plan. FBA stands for Functional Behavior Assessment. All that. So let's get into it. I hope to explain to you in 15 or 20 minutes or less what to do if your child is having undesirable behaviors at school. So this is something where, you know, I've been doing this since 2010, and this is something where it's really, really changed over the past 10 or 15 years. And I remember when I first started this, you know, we were begging schools to please do an FBA, please do an FBA, functional behavior assessment, because kids were having these behaviors, they were getting sent home, they were getting suspended, all that good stuff, right? And we were begging schools to do FBAs and they wouldn't do them. They said, well, we don't have to do them. And now I feel like we've gone full circle and I'm asking schools to don't do an FBA. And here's why. So let's say a kid has negative behaviors at school. And for the record, when we're talking about behaviors, you know, I can see behaviors in a child who has having a complete meltdown, a complete breakdown, a complete emotional dysregulation experience, right? The screaming, the crying, the throwing, the hitting, the spitting, whatever, the task refusal, whatever it may be. Like, I can see that, and we can see that that's a behavior. But I want to tell you, one time I had this client, teenager, and he was misdiagnosed or not diagnosed. I know schools don't diagnose, but mom had been asking for years to get this child evaluated, and they evaluated him and he had an IEP and all that. But the school completely missed the mark as far as his cognitive abilities. And so he was sleeping a lot in class, in school, in high school. And we were sitting at the IEP meeting and talking about the sleeping in class. And I don't know whether to laugh or cry even all these years later, but I remember we were talking about it and we said, I said to one of the teachers, people at the IEP table, well, how often is he sleeping in class? You know, because first of all, let me back up. He had, you know, behaviors is a special factor in IEPs. So on an IEP on that one page under special factors, it says, does the child have behaviors that impede his learning, his or her learning, or that of others, right? And this kid's box was no, he didn't have any behaviors. Meanwhile, he's sleeping in class. So we asked, how often is he sleeping in class? And the teachers kind of conferred with each other. And then they, one of them, you know, sat up straight and she said, oh, about half the time, about half, you know, half the day. So we have a kid here who's sleeping half of the school day away, and they don't think that's a behavior. And so said, and you don't think that's a behavior? And they said, well, he's not bothering anybody. So I'm saying all that to point out that behaviors aren't just about spitting on people, hitting people, cursing out teachers, cursing out classmates. Behavior, again, it's the does the child have behaviors that impede their learning or the learning of their classmates? And I think if you're sleeping half of your school day away, that might be a behavior. So anyway, we got that kid on the right path. But so behaviors is a special factor. And if the child is having behaviors, the team is supposed to do a functional behavior assessment. But here's the thing. IDEA does not define who can do a functional behavior assessment. And of course, there are best practices. OSEP, which is the Office of Special Education Programs, and OSERS, which is another division of the U.S. Department of Ed, they often define and do these dear colleague letters or guidance letters as far as what is best practice. But again, it's a guidance letter. It's a suggestion. It's not like, hey, this is the law and you have to do it. Of course, best practice would be to have someone who is trained in behavior do a functional behavior assessment, but it is not required. And as such, over the years, I have seen teachers be given this responsibility, OTs, speech, guidance counselors. I've seen a lot of different education professionals be given this responsibility to do the FBA. Meanwhile, they've never been trained in behavior. And while that is considered best practice, right? Like let's have the person who's trained in behavior do the behavior, functional behavior assessment. The thing is that as we learn more about ourselves and we learn more about autism and disabilities and all this other stuff, we know that traditional behavior practices are not necessarily what is best for our kids, nor does it even apply because most FBAs are built on this premise and this practice of the four functions of behavior and ABC data, which is antecedent behavior consequence. And you look at the child and what they're doing and what is the antecedent to the behavior, what is the behavior, and then what is the consequence. And you want to take that from like the messy stuff that it is right now and turn it into something good and that we will have a better, you know, antecedent behavior and consequence. But what we're finding is that kids don't necessarily go through the same learning process when they have learning disabilities as other kids. So it may not follow this nice, neat, clean path of ABC. The four functions of behavior I find are often misinterpreted, like that attention seeking piece, like, oh, he's seeking attention. I hate that one because I read somewhere one time, change your language and change your thought process from attention seeking to connection seeking. And see how much your mentality, your bias, how much that changes. Okay, so let's talk about a kid who is having behaviors. And I'm just going to make up a kid who has autism and his name is Jacob because Jacob is the name I use all the time. And Jacob is having behaviors and it might be, you know, it might be very disruptive to the classroom. It might be very disruptive to him. It might be emotional dysregulation, whatever it is. And perhaps they're calling mom and dad frequently to come get the child. So then the team decides, okay, he's having these behaviors. Let's do a functional behavior assessment. Like I said, 10 years ago, we were begging schools to do functional behavior assessments. Now, because I've seen so much missed in these FBAs and so much that's not addressed that I'm kind of backing up and I'm saying, no, don't ask for a functional behavior assessment. You need to take a step back and you need to look at that IEP. And is the IEP solid, robust, and most importantly, is it being implemented with fidelity to avoid these behaviors in children? And here's what I mean by that. Many times kids with autism, let's give, you know, poor little Jacob here, he, you know, their sensory experience is different from ours. Their cognitive processing experience is different from ours. And it might be too much information. It might be too little sensory input if we're talking about vestibular and gross motor input and things like that. So for whatever reason, Jacob is becoming dysregulated and it's not, you know, and it's coming out like I always say, a kid who needs a sensory break is going to take a sensory break, whether or not it's in the IEP. So let's just put it in the IEP. But what I'm finding is that when, like, let's say Jacob is for whatever reason, he's having these sensory experiences and he can't regulate well, he can't self-regulate. So he's having meltdowns, he's having breakdowns, he's eloping, right? And so what happens is that they do an FBA and they say, oh, well, this is, you know, the antecedent and the behavior and the eloping and the consequence. And so, especially like for eloping, schools may want to assign a one-on-one aide or a one-on-one para to the child, right, to keep him from eloping. And so this is what happens, is that Jacob wants to elope, and the aide or para who's sitting with him looks for these cues as they get to know the child. They look for these cues in the child that the kid's going to bolt from the room, right? So she may verbally prompt, because there's this whole prompt hierarchy thing of verbal blah, blah, blah. And she says, Jacob, you know, pay attention. Jacob, listen to the teacher. Jacob, here's your homework, you know, whatever. And then maybe she sees another cue that Jacob is going to elope. So then she taps him on the arm, or maybe on the hand, right? Because we go from verbal prompting to physical prompting, right? And Jacob, don't leave the room. And on and on and on. And they take him through the prompt hierarchy, because that is what traditional behavior modification is. But what no one is addressing is Jacob frustrated because he doesn't understand the material, and it feels like everyone around him understands the material and he does not. He doesn't know how to ask for help, so he just escapes the situation. Perhaps there's a buzzing light, right? An overhead light that is buzzing that he can hear that you can't. Maybe the lights are just too bright. Maybe it's the end of the day and he's just processed so much information that he can't process anymore and he needs a break. So he's going to take a break, and that might mean running from the room. Maybe, and adults do this in the workplace all the time, right? I need to get up and stretch my legs, so I go to the water cooler or I go to the bathroom. Maybe that's what he's doing. Maybe he's just taking a break to stretch his legs. And this is all that he knows how to do. He doesn't know how to ask for it. So this is what I'm finding with FBAs, is that they're ignoring all of that and they're not getting at the root cause of the behavior. On my site, adayinourshoes.com, and I have an article called The Many Flaws of FBAs and Behavior Plans. But I talk about this client I had one time with school refusal, and he wasn't going to school, right? That's what school refusal is. So I'm not even kidding. When the school put on the IEP, they did an FBA, and they put on the IEP that the child refuses to go to school because he has school refusal. And so mom and I were communicating by text, and she said, well, this is what it says. And so I said, yeah, that's not a solid enough FBA. Go back and tell them to do it again. Ask them what they mean by that. So she went back to the school, and the school came back again. And they said, well, he has school refusal because he has anxiety. Okay. So I said, you need to dig deeper. Okay, so why does he have anxiety? And she came back, you know, went back to the school, came back, and the answer was, well, he has school refusal and anxiety because he doesn't want to be away from mom. At this point, like, I'm ready to lose it, because this is what IEP teams are not getting sometimes. I'm not bashing schools. They didn't dig deep enough and say, what is mom providing at home for this child that the child is not getting at school? So why does school feel so unsafe for him that he absolutely, positively cannot bring himself to attend? What feelings, what emotions, what things is mom providing at school that the school is not providing? And you know, what reasonably can be replicated? Or what coping mechanisms does this child need to be taught that he's not, you know, so that he can cope with this new environment? Because, you know, for school refusal, I've seen a lot of things, and I've seen like a lot of school teams really go out of their way and try very hard. And I've honestly had clients where the guidance counselor was going to the child's home at 6 a.m. to try to get them to go to school. But having a trusted adult or any adult just show up at your house at 6 a.m. and say, oh, come on, Jacob, you got to go to school today. Like, that doesn't solve the problem. You're not digging deep enough to say, what is going on during the school day? How is it that this child's needs are not being met? How is it that we have not taught this child enough coping mechanisms to endure a school day that they just absolutely cannot bring themselves to attend? And so that's why I say, before you do an FBA, you need to go back and look at that IEP and say, is this child's need, are this child's needs being met, wholly being met? And if the IEP is there and it's solid and you look at it and you go, yeah, actually, that's a pretty solid IEP. Is it being implemented? Because if a child's needs are being met, then these behaviors wouldn't erupt. And so many behaviors happen because the child's needs are not met, right? The old Ross Green saying, kids do well when they can. And when we put demands on kids that they cannot meet, that's when the behaviors erupt. And so whether that looks like running and screaming out of the room or completely shutting down and falling asleep, it can be all over the place. If you're completely overwhelmed and you just shut down, that's what you do. I remember one time we took my son, he was a preschooler at the time, maybe in a primary grade, like 5, 7, I don't know, he was young. We went to these like all-inclusive places that my parents invited us to, and it had this giant dining hall where everybody like sits, and it's literally hundreds of families. It's a family resort, so a lot of kids, a lot of noise. And you sit at a big table, and depending on the size of your group, you sit with people you don't know and all that. So we're in this giant dining hall for our meals, and pretty consistently, it got to where I would just take food back to the room for him because Kevin was just consistently falling asleep at the table. And the wait staff, others at our table, whatever, they would joke, oh, ha, 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 you must have really worn him out. He must have done too much swimming. You must have done too much this because he's so tired. That wasn't it. What it was that this was just so much information for him to process, the noise, the sights, the everything for him. It was new, it was different, and he was a little kid trying to process all this information that he just completely shut down and fell asleep at the table. It wasn't really about being tired. So, you know, after that happened 2 or 3 times, we were like, okay, he can't handle this, and let's find a different situation and a different way for him to eat. And you know what? And from then on, the rest of the trip, it was fine. That's what we kind of have to do as far as adjusting kids' behavior when it comes to the classroom, right? Like relating this back to Kevin, what his dad and I could have done is kept, you know, maybe rubbing his arm, tapping his arm, tapping his head. Hey, Kev, wake up, it's dinner time, you have to eat, come on, wake up. But that wouldn't have gotten to the root of the problem. And the root of the problem was this was too much information for him. He couldn't process it and he would just shut down. So what you do is you go back and you look at it and you go, okay, this is too much information for him. Let's remove all of this stimuli and see if he can cope. The other thing, you know, we could have done is, you know, we were on vacation, so we didn't have him with us, but we could have done sound canceling headphones or something like that, right? There are other options to teach him to manage situations like this. We could have asked for, you know, a table off in another room or a table in the corner where there wouldn't be as much. Or we could have asked for an early meal time when there wouldn't be as many people in the dining hall, you know, things like that. There are all kinds of things you can do when you really dig in and look at what is the problem, right? My client who was falling asleep in class, he just couldn't do it. He didn't know how to ask for help. The IEP team did not recognize his cognitive limits, did not give him the proper instruction to learn this information, and just let him sleep the day away because, hey, he's not bothering anybody, right? So look, this is more than I wanted to say about even half of this topic, so I'm going to end that. But before you ask for an FBA, please make sure that your team has addressed everything, because most behaviors erupt from unmet needs. And that's where you need to go first and make sure that every single need is being met and that the IEP is being implemented as written, if it's appropriate, before you ask for an FBA. I'll put a lot more information in the show notes for you. And as always, thank you for listening. And I hope this helped you.
Thank you for listening to Don't IEP Alone with Special Education Advocate Lisa Leitner. We're so glad you've joined us and would love to connect with you outside of the show. For more information about Lisa, the IEP Toolkit, and more ways we can help you in your process, go to adayinourshoes.com. From self-care tips to common IEP mistakes, there's even more to explore. Don't forget to rate and review the podcast and subscribe to never miss an episode. Until next time, don't IEP alone, and you don't have to.